Welcome to Manage This, the podcast by project managers for project managers. This is our every other week chance to meet and talk about what matters most to you as a professional project manager. We talk about getting started, getting certified, getting the stuff of project management done. I'm your host, Nick Walker, and beside me are our in-house experts, Andy Crow and Bill Yates. They are project managers themselves. They mentor other project managers and those working to become one. And guys, today's topic addresses what might be to some teams sort of an elephant in the room, the fact that many projects don't move along as we originally envisioned. In fact, Andy, sometimes, as a friend of mine once put it, you know, when the manure hits the combine blades.
Right. The fertilizer hits the ventilation system. Right. Sure. Yeah. And you know what? A lot of times figuring out what to do with a troubled project, with a project that's in distress, and where do you start? And a lot of PMs spend time in this space. This isn't an unfamiliar territory for a lot of people.
Yeah. People should not be surprised by this. This happens. This is a part of project management. There's a quote by William A. Cohen. He says, all successful projects are simply a long series of adversities that must be overcome. Adversity is normal.
So we just need to look reality in the face and say, okay, this is just going to happen. Adversity is going to happen. But is there a difference between just simple adversity, you know, little roadblocks that come in the way, or something, you know, that is really in flames?
Well, there certainly can be. A lot of times, project managers start a project. They don't have any input into the finish date. They don't have any input into the schedule necessarily or the budget. And now they kind of have to find some way to meet the goals of the project. By the time that they get added, they're already in trouble.
Yeah. So sometimes it's even almost too late. So what do you do at that point? You know, how do you sort of regroup and pick up?
Yeah, that's what we'll focus on today, is looking at those troubled projects, mm-hmm. those that are in recovery mode, those that need turnaround.
Right. And so, Bill, maybe not just the ones in recovery mode, but the ones that need to be in recovery mode. Maybe
right.
They're going along business as usual. They haven't detected trouble yet. So let me ask you, if you're thinking about a project, what's the canary in the coal mine to you to know if there are problems on the project, to know if it's time to kind of circle the wagons and start thinking about it differently, put it in recovery mode? What are some of the triggers?
Yeah, that's the perfect place to start. There are many triggers to me, many signs to look at to detect trouble. And some of those are real soft skill type things. You've got to read people. Others are hardcore metrics. If I think about soft skill stuff, Andy, I think about some of the past projects that I worked on where the train came off the rails. And many times you could pick up on it in your interaction with the customer. The customer's attitude towards you or towards the project or towards the team changed.
And, right.
In some cases, the customer disappeared. They no longer had an interest in the project, and that was scary. That's scary.
Well, as long as the money's still flowing, I guess it's not that scary.
Right. Yeah, you may think, you know, well, there are times when I wish my customer would go away so we could get something done.
Yeah.
You know, but what I'm talking about here is a sudden neglect. You know, it's like you're dating someone and they're not returning your phone call.
The new term for that is ghosting. You're being ghosted.
Right. So your customer starts ghosting you. There's no longer an interest. Or they seem, maybe they're not showing up for the status meetings the way they used to. They're not being responsive when you're asking for decisions to be made. So customer or senior management, you know, it could be that my customer's still engaged, but maybe this is a project I'm doing for external purposes. And my internal manager is kind of giving me the cold shoulder. They don't have that availability or interest anymore. That, to me, too, is something I need to investigate. That could
so
be trouble.
That requires some intuition, though, on the PM's part, you know, because you can drive yourself crazy trying to read into every non-return phone call or
right.
every missed meeting or things like that. I'm a data guy, and to me, I like to see information. So one of the things I love to look at, I love earned value metrics. To see, and I'm a believer in the saying, there's an old saying that 2 points make a line and 3 points make a trend.
Yes.
And I pay attention to that because when I see, for instance, instance, if I see a performance metric, your schedule performance index or your variances trending down over two or three reporting periods, then I'm going to start paying a lot of attention to that. Right. If I see things consistently coming in, I also watch, and I'm a big believer in holding people accountable to individual estimates. And when I say accountable, I'm not saying you would necessarily let somebody go because they missed several estimates, but you loop back with them. You help them kind of steep in that. You show them, hey, you estimated here and you came in here. And in fact, I'm working on a chart right now that tracks people's accuracy to their own estimates over time.
Excellent.
Because I'm fascinated with that metric. It helps. The more accurate you can get your team to estimate, the better off you are.
Oh, yeah.
So I pay a lot of attention to that.
That's good over the life of the project, too. So that makes sense to do that, to really jump in, hold them accountable right up front with that.
That's How about rework?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Rework is a big one to me. That's a key metric. If I'm tracking rework, and to your point about trends, if rework is trending up suddenly, or change requests, let's say there's a sudden spike in change requests.
Right.
Those are warning signs to me. That canary is starting to show signs.
Those are kind of evil twins, the rework and change requests.
Right.
They sort of go together. There's never time to do it right, but there's always time to do it over.
Yeah.
And so you're forced to relook at something. People
right.
just didn't get it right at some point.
There's another for me too, Andy, where if I think about, let's say we're tracking expenses and we look back over the past month and maybe we paid a lot more overtime or paid higher consulting fees than normal. That tends to raise an eyebrow for me too.
This is getting a lot more attention at a federal level too. This whole idea of overtime is starting to, people are paying more attention to it. So businesses definitely care about it. Now the government's starting to care about it.
Yep.
In a very different kind of way, and forcing people to track it and account for it a little bit differently.
Right.
So it's going to get more attention. There's no question.
And on larger projects, sometimes if you're the project manager and you have a larger project team and a certain area starts to have higher consulting fees or more overtime, that could be an indication to me that, okay, they've got an issue they're dealing with. They don't really want to tell me about it yet.
Right. So my wife had a professor in college, and she went to Furman University that you perhaps know well.
Go Paladins.
And her professor's quote that we still use many years after we've graduated was, things take longer than they do. So
<Nice.
laughs> I think every project manager can relate to that. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So we have a problem.
Yeah, and it seems like a little delicate balancing act here sometimes to determine just how big of a problem.
And one other symptom that I don't want to overlook too, Nick, sometimes as a project manager, you'll pick up on things within the team. There could be some conflict on the team that you don't understand. Is this personal or is this because they know there's a bigger issue that, again, I don't have full exposure to yet? Or do I just have like warring parties on the team? Or what's going on here? Is this something that's going to upend the cart? Is this going to throw us off? Because suddenly I've got like a team funk going on here.
Right.
I can't explain it.
Yes. So this is the thing. The PM, project manager, is at a point, and you've got sort of a senior manager, the organization, and sponsors above you. And you can picture that as a triangle with the top pointing down. And if that makes sense, the tip, the sharp point of the triangle is down. And then on the other side is the team.
Mm.
And the PM is right in between those two and is sort of at this friction point. And it is a challenging job. And so the PM a lot of times will pick up on team distress and distress within the senior management organization, sponsors, et cetera. We'll just lump all of that and call it senior management. You can know about things going wrong. It's a very sensitive thing. Once you kind of get into that, it's as if you're driving a car, and everybody's had that experience where you can tell you've driven this car enough to know something's not quite right.
Mm-hmm.
It's not stopping. It's not breaking down, but something's going wrong.
Right.
All right. So we want to, you know, fix it before it breaks down, right?
Yes.
So where to begin?
Well, there's a couple of approaches. One thing you can do is bring in outside help. I've done that in a previous life where I've been one of the guys who's been parachuted in and sort of a tiger team to reboot a troubled project. And that was a fun chapter in my life. It was an interesting chapter, very stressful. They would fly me in. A lot of times I would commute and I would come in and help get the project back on track. The other approach is to try and do it internally and try and fix it yourself, which is probably a better approach if you can do that rather than just bring somebody in from the outside. But either way.
Andy, I think back to some of the interactions we've had with students, with project management professionals through the years through VelociTeach, and that Tiger Team approach, you know, that is very intriguing. And I know for you professionally, you probably grew a lot during that time. Because you're the fix-it guy, right? And I think of some of the we do a lot of work with Siemens. They have a big power generation group, and they have a group of engineers that are experts in diagnosing what's going wrong with one of these wind turbines. And I've had some of them in the classroom before describe all the different points on the globe that they've had to fly to go fix a troubled project. And if you envision some of these wind turbines. These blades are 150 to 250 feet long. They're huge, right? So if there's a tiny little vibration, if it's off just a little bit, that's a big, big issue. It's going to break equipment. They're not going to be as efficient or produce the power they're supposed to. And it's a pretty good analogy for the team, too, right? Just the same way these experts are flying in, parachuting in to solve the problem for that project. Many times there's a little trouble. There's something off with our team. And if an expert from outside can come in and help fix it, great. But to Andy's point, I think the second option is probably the one that we're most familiar with, where we've got to heal ourselves. It's kind of that do-it-yourself approach.
Right, and I'm wondering if those guys can consult on a wobbly ceiling fan, too. Probably the same principles at work, maybe even easier for them.
It would be ironic if they go home and their ceiling fan is wobbling, right?
Maybe the manure hit the turbine fan.
That could be it. Yeah.
Well, so we pick an approach. Whether it's the Tiger Team, whether it's to solve it internally, let's get into that a little bit more. Why is that advantageous?
Yeah, and we're going to talk about the steps. What steps should we follow as project managers? We've got a problem. We've detected the problem. Now, what do we do with it? And I want to quote. You know, Andy's quoted some famous folks. And I want to throw this quote from a leadership expert out as we start in this area. He's a soft skills guru. We know him as Mike Tyson. And he says, everyone has
soft?
A plan. Yeah, soft, right? Everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. And I can relate to that as a project manager, right? So much of our time is spent planning. And then suddenly we have these variances, these gaps. Things are not going per the plan. And we start to get just consumed with it. You know, now we've got a serious issue here that we've got to fix. We've been punched in the mouth. So what are we going to do about it? So Andy and I hope we can tease out some advice for project managers, some things to think through.
Right. For our poor IT listeners out there who are in information technology, they're the ones who this always happens with the interfaces. You know, you plan a project, you look at it, and you say, oh, this will be easy to talk to this other system. It's not going to be easy to talk to that other system. Yeah. Nobody's going to make that easy. That's the punch in the mouth you're about to get.
Yes.
Are there specific steps then that we can identify and take?
Yeah, the first piece of advice I'd go with, two words, calm down. Calm down. We've all been there. There's a troubled project. We're the frog who's felt the temperature rising so slowly in our project, in our debrief meetings, our status meetings. We've seen a variance, to Andy's point. The trend has been slowly but definitely emerging, and we've got a troubled project, and now I can't sleep at night. Now I'm worried about my career. Now I'm worried about my senior management, my sponsor. I'm worried about my team. The first thing I've got to do once I'm staring this problem face to face, staring it down, is I've got to calm down. I've got to get my emotions under control.
Nobody is at their best when they're relating or trying to lead out of fear.
Right.
That's never going to, you're never going to be at your best, period, end of sentence.
That's right.
And the leader is really the one that's going to set the tone here.
Absolutely. And, you know, I don't want to completely discount that emotion. I think for me, it's a motivator. If I can not be overwhelmed by that emotion, then I can harness it, right? I can harness that power, kind of going back to the power example there. But I've got to get it under control because, to Andy's point, it blocks clear thinking.
I saw a coffee cup the other day. You've seen the ones that say keep calm and carry on. And this one said, I will not keep calm and you can shut up. Yeah, okay. Maybe you need to put that one aside and sort of tap into your inner British resolve here.
So we want to probably, my guess is, avoid finger pointing to some extent, but it's hard not to do that.
Yeah, we want to get to the root of the issue.
This is the time to point fingers, Nick.
Oh, it is? Okay. All right.
We want to point the finger at the cause.
Yeah. And so you know the joke about the first person you blame is the guy who just left.
Yeah, right? Of course. Yeah.
The employee who's just left. And the second person to blame is who, Bill?
The consultant.
The vendor, yeah.
Never should have gone with that consultant.
Right. Man, we'll know better next time.
Exactly.
You know, there's a bunch of ways to do root cause analysis. There's Ishikawa diagrams. There are also known as fishbone diagrams. These root cause, the point behind the root cause is to really understand the problem. And this is uncomfortable for people. Mm-hmm. People do not want to talk about problems. So I've got a colleague, not at this company, but someone that I do work with from time to time. And this person regularly says, you know what? I don't want to look backward. I only want to look forward. I want to keep positive. I don't want to talk about the problem. I want to talk about a solution. That doesn't work well. And Mahan Khalsa, in his wonderful book, Let's Get Real or Let's Not Play, says you have to really understand the problem, or the only way you're going to solve it is through blind luck. So I'm a big believer in taking time and getting to the core and really understanding what went wrong. So these root cause diagrams are one way. I'm a big fan of the five whys.
Exactly. I was going to bring that up. The five why technique is an excellent way to force the team to continue to dig deeper and deeper and keep asking the question of why.
Sometimes you get to surprising answers, and Toyota made this famous. They use this technique. They continue to ask why because people at first want to deal with these surface answers. Oh, it's this stupid vendor. Well, okay, wait a minute. Why? You know, and you start looking deeper. What was it about this that didn't work? A lot of times you get to some very surprising answers. And the point here for anyone listening is this is uncomfortable, and that's okay. Just embrace, lean into that discomfort. Stephen Colbert talks about standing the wrong way on an elevator and facing everybody and leaning into that discomfort. And with his ratings right now, he's probably getting a good chance to lean into that. But it's a good thing. It helps you to really understand and get deep in the problem. And you've got to understand.
Does this also help you identify maybe some parts of the program that can be salvaged?
Yeah, it does. And to do that, you really have to have the right people in the room. You've got to be asking the question and doing the analysis with the right people. Again, we talked about sometimes you need to bring in an outside expert. The people that know the problem most intimately are probably on your project team, right? They've been the closest trying to vet out those requirements, come up with a solution. They've dealt with the vendor, the solutions that may have had an issue.
And yet, they're the ones who may have gotten you into this situation.
Exactly.
So it may take some fresh thinking here.
Yep, it's tricky.
So what's the right number of people to have in the room?
Yeah. There's Scott Birkin is an author that I've probably referenced before. I've got a lot of respect for him. He has a quote on this. He says, the more contentious or complex the issue, the smaller the group should be. Now, we've also mentioned the wisdom of the crowds, right? So, you know, if you just took that at face value, you could say, oh, bring everybody into the room.
No. And the reason why is this whole idea that's familiar to project managers of communication channels.
Right.
N times N minus 1 divided by 2 or N factorial. And the whole idea is the more people you get in a room, the more conversation that has to take place, the different ideas. And then you got to vet those and distill those down. I was in a meeting this week outside of the office with a group of people. And at some point, there were too many people. There were just too many people in this meeting. And I was leading the meeting. And at some point, I had to step back and just let people talk. And it was a little bit frustrating because we were off topic. We were off target. Mm-hmm. And yet I realized quashing that conversation was just going to be counterproductive. We needed to let everybody have their say. In a crisis, that's not always the best way.
Mm. Yeah. What do you think, Andy, what do you think is the appropriate role for the project manager in this? So you have the subset that you think are the right people to help identify the problem. You're using techniques to get there. What's the role of the PM in that?
Okay, so let's go back to our idea of an internal PM and an external PM.
Right.
If you've been brought in externally, your job is to listen. Listen, 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 and listen some more, and really start to understand what's going on. And it may take a little bit longer to really get what's happening. Because, again, people all have their own way of representing it. If the project's in trouble, they may be representing that out of fear, and you may get some distorted things and really have to dig and dig. If you're internal and you already have a good feel, it may you may have to change your leadership style. Mm. You may have to become a little bit more autocratic, a little bit more directing, and a little bit more authoritative.
That's good. I one of the things that I've learned as a leader, the art of asking the right question, and I think you nail that, whether it's an external or an internal PM, somebody who's kind of parachuted in, who needs to do a lot of listening. One of the keys is to ask the questions, ask the right questions, and listen, lean in and listen. Make sure you're really helping identify that root cause.
The more people trust you internally in this process, the more forthcoming they'll be.
Mm,
a lot of times people are going to represent it, and they're always going to be pointing outward. They're always going to be saying, you want to know what the problem is, and that's the reason it's so easy to talk about somebody who's left or some vendor because they probably can't defend themselves.
Right. You know, I'm listening to this, and I know for me, starting over is it goes against my grain. It's like I don't want to take two steps back before I can go forward. I just want to keep moving forward. That must require a little bit of discipline.
It does. Revalidating the goals and the purpose of the project is a worthy thing to do at this point. It's a smart thing to do. But it is, Nick, it's difficult.
Yeah.
It's very difficult.
Right. And what you're asking in that situation is, are we still solving the right problem?
So you're actually going back to the beginning?
Yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah. It's scary.
We wasted all our time.
Yeah.
No, not necessarily. And you're not necessarily throwing out all the solutions. You're going back to the business case. You're going back to the charter. You're going back to a contract. You're going back to the scope statement, whatever it was that you began with, where life originated here. And you're asking, if we solved this problem, if we gave this solution, if we delivered this the right way, would we still be on track? Would this be a success? Mm-hmm. It's these critical success factors that you're revalidating. Did the team just not execute well, or did they deliver something that didn't solve the problem?
Mm. Yeah. This is a twisted way to look at it, but one of the good things that happens from this is you're forced to go back and look at the value that the project is going to bring and make sure that it's still on point. Markets change. Some of the projects we work on are really long. Right? So we start with a certain set of assumptions. Those may have changed. The market may have changed. Our customer may have changed. The needs may have modified. Does our project still answer the question, is it a need that needs to be addressed?
So in some ways, you're not only starting over, you're actually looking to the end? Am I hearing that right? You're sort of looking to the end and saying, what is this supposed to look like? And how do I get there?
And we're big believers, and we constantly advocate for beginning with the end in mind.
Yeah.
One of Stephen Covey's 7 habits, I believe.
Uh-huh. Very nice. There's one other piece to think about here. Specifically, if we have requirements, let's say we have 10 requirements that we're to deliver with this project, we may be through this looking to see, okay, if this aspect of our project is troubled, then does it only impact a subset of those requirements, or is it everything? It may be that we look at those requirements and go, okay, if we ditch those, if we cut out that piece of the scope of this project, is the rest recoverable? So then we go back, you know, PMI speak, the requirements traceability matrix. So who owns that requirement? Who do we need to engage in that conversation to say, hey, we think the right move to make is to ditch this requirement. We don't need to build to that spec anymore. And then we think the project can recover.
This is leadership, though, Bill. This is hard work to actually do this. It's one thing to sit here and talk about it behind a microphone. It's another thing for a leader to walk in and look at it. The truth is, something has to change. If you do what you've done, you're going to get what you got. Mm-hmm. And so it's not going to improve. You've got to change things up. Scope is one of the big variables that you potentially can impact in almost any project. Not every project. Some are done under specific contracts. Mm-hmm. But almost any project has to go back and look at that. That's one of those things that they can influence. is the scope.
So you're talking about a reboot.
I am talking about a reboot in the sense, so I would say Control-Alt-Delete, but I started in the old DOS days, and that really dates me, because now that doesn't do what it used to do.
Right.
For those younger listeners, that used to actually reboot your computer, just so you know. So, I am talking about a reboot, but what I'm talking about is trying something different, and that's challenging. If you've done this project since the beginning, you've been the PM, and now suddenly things aren't going well, it's really hard to say, okay, I got to do something different.
Right. Yeah, different's scary.
Right. And what do I do?
Right.
Exactly. What does that look like?
Yeah, yeah. The one of the when we do reboot, one of the approaches to take is to simplify. Let's pursue simple solutions. Now that we've got our hands around this problem, we've looked at the problem in the light of day. What is the simple solution? What's the most simple solution that we can offer to right the ship?
Let's rate our critical success factors from greatest to least. Let's talk about how well the solution design is going to meet these things. Let's also take a look at the team and see how their capability to meet these things
right.
is.
Right. I can think, when we go down to this topic, I think of specific projects where we fell in love with a technology or an approach. We had a process that we just thought was designed exquisitely. It was going to be the best solutions. Most of these are software examples with financial service systems. But there was a point in a troubled project where we had to scrap it. We had to say, you know, this new tool it's a beautiful thing, but it's too buggy right now. We can't rely on it. Or we've been embarrassed in front of our client with it 2 months in a row now. We've got to ditch it and go with a more simple approach, the old tried and true, you know. And and you may get a lot of resistance from the team members who have invested in
right.
learning the new system, you know, bringing that new process into play. Or maybe they built it out. It may be a new module or capability that you created.
I would advise you to blame the vendor, but it sounds like you might have been the vendor in that case, so we won't go there.
That's true.
This seems like almost a metaphor for a lot of different projects. You know, the code okay, the data bad.
Right. Yeah, I can think of a specific example. I worked with Verizon for a number of years, and we built a really fancy interface. Again, this is an information technology project that we were doing. And we had to throw away the interface and go to something simple. All we were trying to do is load data and and crank up a system, prime the pump and get it going. And through that, I earned the reputation, one of the guys on the team for Verizon, he actually called me Mr. Control C, Control V. And that for those who don't use that shortcut, that's, you know, to copy and paste data from one place to another. So we kind of went with a very, you know, a simple approach of roll the sleeves up, get your hands on the data, and get it in here, and let's see if this stuff is valid or not. Forget the fancy interface. Let's get it going.
You know what, Bill, when you're talking about simplifying here, one of my favorite quotes, and I can't remember who said it, but the quote is, perfection's achieved not when there's nothing left to add, but when there's nothing left to take away. And so you pare it down, you simplify. You know, project managers are always afraid of gold plating, and gold plating is just adding additional scope that wasn't critical to the success of the project and maybe wasn't even requested by the customer, something else to add, and it's time to really pare things down to their critical components and understand them.
Well, guys, I hate to jump in here, but, you know, we've talked about detecting problems. We've talked about different approaches to analyzing the course of action we need to take, rebooting. But we really haven't gotten into some of the juicy stuff.
Some of the chocolate.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the team dynamics, communication. So can we pick this up next time?
Absolutely.
I think that's a good idea.
So watch this space. There's a lot more to come. In the meantime, Andy Crow, Bill Yates, thanks as always for sharing your expertise. That's it for us here on Manage This. We hope you'll tune back in on August 16th, when we'll talk about some of the painful but necessary steps project managers may need to take to get a project back on track. And I do mean painful. You can visit us at velocityteach.com/manage this to subscribe to this podcast, to see a transcript of the show, or to contact us. And tweet us at @manage_this if you have a quick comment for us or a question for our experts. We'd love to hear from you. That's all for this episode. Talk to you soon. In the meantime,
keep calm, and manage this.